this is Michael Vandervoort, and it is September 23rd. We passed over from summer into autumn over the weekend, and welcome to fall, Robin. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm okay. I was not overly joyed with the now we're in football season, so I didn't like the Saints results yesterday, but
As a
other than
pretty
that, I'm good.
miserable get that was a pretty miserable game. I watched the Buccaneers, which was an equally painful experience. But my bandwagon for this season, the Detroit Lions won, so they're doing okay. So anyway, and we had, at least here in Louisiana, always the weather. We had an overnight cold front come in, so we dropped into the 60s. So we were talking about heat when we did our first show of the season last Friday, and now, at least here, it's very comfortable, 64 degrees. So I'll take it.
Oh,
I'm
that
headed to
sounds delightful. That's not
I'm
here
headed to
yet.
Chicago for the rest of the week, starting tomorrow. So I should have a cool week instead of the 100. So anyway, let's jump to our guest. Larry Neal of Sisiv is joining us from London. So we've tried to do this show 3 times, so third time is the charm. Larry, welcome to Drive Through HR, and sorry that we had to make you do like an across the pond, but at least it's still in the afternoon there, although I know you just arrived today. So thanks for doing this.
So far, I'm in good shape, Michael, so I'll do my best. It's a pleasure to
Awesome. We'll
be on.
hope you stay awake for another half an hour anyway. So, Larry, why don't you bring us right to the point of the show, which is to have a conversation with you about, I guess, double, I don't know what to call it exactly, people who hold more than one job, which I have often wondered if it's like an urban myth. I have never encountered this in the wild myself. So I'm very interested to have this discussion with you. But before we go there, tell us about yourself and your background, and then Robin will follow up with a question about your company.
Terrific. Well, thank you again for having me join you on this topic. It's a fascinating topic, and I think one that's becoming more and more relevant as the world turns here. So I joined Sisiv just about a year and a half ago. I come from outside the background screening industry. Most of my career was sort of, half of it was in commercial roles, heading up sales, marketing efforts for a variety of different, what I would describe as predominantly information technology and data businesses, much like Sisiv, but oftentimes quite different applications. And then the second half of my career was, running CEO of different businesses like that. So I love the variety of data, vertical software applications, technology, and how it, really revolutionizing productivity and capability of companies. And so that's been my kind of common thread throughout my career. And Sisiv is a really unique opportunity to apply a lot of that to me. It's different in many ways, but it's similar in other ways. So, but it also feels like fertile ground for lots and lots of improvement, which is really what makes it very exciting for me.
So tell us a little bit about more about Sisiv. What are the offerings?
So Sisiv, I would, maybe just by contrast with some of the other players, we're very vertical market focused, and our primary markets are healthcare, transportation, and financial services. And common characteristics of those are, each of those businesses operates today, different regulatory, sort of oversight environment, risk environment. But generally, I would describe them on sort of that high end of the spectrum, where ensuring that you both hire quality individuals that uphold your requirements and certainly represent who you want for your business. The standards are quite high in those verticals, right? So what we, I think long before my arrival, Sisiv sort of carved out that path, really working closely with large customers in those verticals. And a lot of the work you would see is, tailored to their needs, oftentimes very much integrated into their applicant workflow and hiring process. So very tightly coupled. Also, there's certain nuances, like in healthcare, that I have to have an ability to monitor compliance to a license. I have to monitor for any sanction issues, violations, right? So it's really kind of aligned very specifically for that purpose. It's been a great path for us. It's been one we're, very much committed to, and actually are accelerating. I still believe there's a pretty large unmet need in the general space that we're in, and not just pre-employment hiring, right? But also, managing the risk of your employee post-hiring, right? And certainly the topic we're talking about is one of those elements.
Yeah, and certainly in those verticals, in those industries, that's not just go through this process to be hired. That's
That's right.
ongoing.
That,
Then
I
if
know
you
that's
go
kind of an
into
interesting angle, actually. Most background check companies, were like one size fits all for everything. And so it's, is there, are you, I'm diverting already before we get to the main topic. It just because this is intriguing to me. How did Sisu decide to kind of focus on that higher end? And is there a specific reason for that?
It's a really interesting history. I'll give you my impression of it. It wasn't at Sisu all this happened,
Of course.
right? So what I would describe as, Sisu has, number of competitors that, there are in the background screening space. Some are larger, right? So really to differentiate and to compete, now I'm going back in time quite a ways, like 10 or more years back, right? The Sisu found a path of differentiation to be offering more customization, integration, tailoring of, how the work is done, right? As a means to compete against larger players. And they really locked on to something good. That was, and there certainly is a segment of the market that that's valuable to. Not everyone, right? As you described, some people just want it more. Just, I got to get this done. I want to do it as fast and effectively and expensively as I can do, right? But it's not a homogeneous market that way. So I think Sisu, really carved itself out a path for that. In the healthcare vertical, Sisu acquired PreCheck, which, was a leading player in the healthcare vertical. But it actually, very much like the strategy that Sisu was beginning to employ, that was happening at PreCheck. So that we sort of acquired that, that entry into the healthcare space, but with a business that was very aligned to our fundamental strategy of, working with the higher end of the market, really being partners with our customers.
Very cool. So I alluded to this, the question I'm going to ask you now as we opened, and that literally is like this has been since the pandemic, which every show that we've done in the last 4 years touches on the pandemic, even when you try to stay away from it, we just can't help it. So apparently it's one of the seminal moments of all of our lives, for a while. But this idea that people were working from home, they're working remotely. And through the magic of technology, they're able to take on additional jobs and double dip and triple dip and use clickers and do all sorts of tricks and stuff to just really take advantage of not just one employer, but more than one. And like I said, as I opened, I've heard this and read this and people have talked about it, but I have never personally encountered this situation, although I don't work in a big company anymore, but I know a lot of HR people. So I've always kind of wondered if it was more of an urban myth, like the fear, the vampire coming out of the grave to kill the relative or whatever, because we let people work at home, but apparently it's not. So can you start to enlighten us a bit on this, the trend, Larry, and what it really looks like?
Happy to do so. You could you're right in, I think, identifying, COVID and remote work that generated COVID, being really the catalyst for this issue kind of becoming more prominent for employers. You could call it an element of long COVID that no one maybe quite anticipated. What I would say, and you had mentioned up front, Michael, the terminology we do hear, overemployment, which is a kind of a cute euphemism for having two jobs. But that does seem to be the name that is often used for it. A couple of things I would say. I mean, it isn't like many of these things, a phenomenon that didn't exist previously, right? When I, as I mentioned in my introduction, I spent a good number of years managing sales organizations. We would see that this occur within sales organizations. And, you can see the parallel with how it happened there with why it's happening with remote work, right? We'd have a salesperson that works remotely, may work out of their home, they're chasing a sales target and so forth, right? It was pretty easy for them to, and often the way we saw it was we would make them a job, hire them, and then they, for whatever reason, decided they just wouldn't quit the job they had before. And it always felt a little bit like that happened at that moment of time. And, it's like, when are you going to quit your job? And then they realize, maybe I won't right away. So anyway, you could see the sort of foundation of it coming from, from what we're very much dealing with today. And we'll get deeper into this. I would not call it a widespread phenomenon in terms of volume, but it's definitely occurring, and I can give, a few illustrations of it. And it is obviously troubling, and it's not just productivity, right, of your individuals and your workforce. There's other risks and, reputational, legal, all kinds of other risks that can emerge from this, right? And that's really where customers are coming at it from, less in terms of this volume of work is, really having a productivity, impact by people that have these two jobs. It's more the risk that opens.
Well, and I guess there's also, depending on like what the other job is and who it's with, there's also ethical and conflict of interest kinds of situations. And I mean, people have always talked about moonlighting, right? And like where somebody works two jobs, literally works two jobs. But this is a little bit different. But okay, well, if you want to, maybe like, can you give us an example? Robin, sorry, I'm gonna shut up here in a second. Can you give us an example of kind of what a typical situation might look like?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I'll give a couple of different ones because it shows the sort of range of the problem, right? I'll go first with one I don't know if I should say I admire it, but I do have to admire the creativity behind it. It was an individual that actually had three jobs. They were in technology and software, developing software. But what this individual had done, come to find out, was employed a small team, I think it was four or five, of software developers in India. So he was able to accomplish the work and the volume of work associated with three jobs by, by setting it up that way.
Sending it to other people and having them send it back. Okay, cool.
And that's kind of the funny part of the story, because you always assume the implication of all this is lower productivity, because how could you get the same if somebody's working two jobs? Well, here's the exception. How you could get the same. So just I find that one a particularly interesting sort of example. I would not say that's mainstream at all. Typically, it does vary obviously by type of role. Some roles are easier to do this than others. We do see it a fair amount in technology. And I just point out there as well that oftentimes, companies look at, well, I can address this by having a contract worker or, something that's more explicitly set up for the possibility someone's going to do other work. But I can tell you there, this is even true for ourselves at SISEP. We've still found situations where the consultant that's doing the work is basically overbilling us and taking, representing that we're getting the best amount of their time and work, but in reality, discovering that, in fact, that's not the case. And there's another customer that they're working for that's consuming, the concept I'm billing more than 100% of my time, right? So you can see that getting pretty tricky, right? Because they're not violating per se the nature of the agreement, but they're certainly not performing, So I think these are, factors that are evolving where, we really have to address the various possibilities and ways that this unfolds. And the heart of it comes down to, really being able to understand and monitor what your employees are doing and how they're performing. It's really the underlying foundation that's necessary long term for this. So it is a real thing. Again, I would not say it's widespread in terms of numbers. We had one recently. We do kind of a rescreen where they have us do a one-time run through. I think we found about 30 or so out of, several thousand employees. So not a large number, but an area of heightened risk and concern for, all the reasons you mentioned earlier, but also in making sure there's not an ability for that to happen and that they're not dealing with, right? If there's sort of a preventative measure, or, they want to be on top of those things before they do come problematic. So that's oftentimes what they're looking for as well. How did this happen? How do we prevent it from happening going forward?
So one of the questions that does really become, how do you prevent it from happening? Because, if there's return to office, return to work, return to office, everybody come back into the office, there's probably some thought behind it. Well, if we get everybody in the building, There's the old school ass and chair. We're going to walk past and see what they're working on. But that's not necessarily going to do
That's
the
right.
trick anyway. A page of code looks like a page of code unless you go up and look at it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Robin. It doesn't guarantee that you
Yeah.
which problem, right? Particularly if you broaden it to say, the quote unquote quiet quitting, right? Which
Yeah.
has to do, more with do bare minimum performance to maintain my job, right? So that can happen in an office or you're working
Yeah.
remotely. And so that's, a
Well,
phenomenon.
and I remember reading when this when we first, just like Michael, we've heard the anecdotal stories and folks talking about this, but I can remember reading an article once with somebody, and they said the key as the employee, right, who was doing this had two or three jobs, and they said the key for them, so it almost was quiet quitting in some ways, but it was, I'm the employee and I'm doing working these two, three full-time jobs, and the key is not to get too engaged with any of these employers. I don't want to fall in love with my job. I'm going to sort of, it's a job, it's a means to an end. I'm socking away money because I want to buy a house, whatever it is. And so I'm going to come in, I'm going to do the work, I'm going to do the bare minimum. I'm not going to be a superstar because I don't want anybody thinking I'm a superstar and paying more attention to me and giving me more work, right? So I'm going to come in and just get the job done, but stay under the radar.
I think that's right. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. The other aspect of this that is you kind of really have to think about the implications of it because it's unique is if I have two jobs, the mindset of an individual about losing their job is different when they have two jobs versus just
Yeah.
one job, right? So I think you do run into a view, underlying this that says, I'll do it for as long as I can get away with it, right?
Yeah.
So that does, that certainly changes, how an individual, would, as an employee, you normally sort of look at their career, the importance of their job, right? That can also shift it to a different place where they're like, okay, I'll do this. If I can do it for another 6 months, I'll make all this extra money and I'm good. If I lose that one now, so am I the one.
Yeah.
It creates a very different dynamic where it occurs, when it occurs.
There are some interesting implications about this to me. Because this is one of those like classic HR situations where there's one bad apple, maybe more than one, but these are not frequent flyer type problems, right? This is going to be a one-off, at least in my mind. I can't imagine you have one of these, once a week, unless maybe in technology companies or whatever. So, but because of the fact that companies are worried about productivity and all the other things that you issued, they're going to start reacting to this for everybody, right? So it opens up monitoring of technology, like through, like aggressive monitoring for people that are working at home, or worse, even worst case than that, ending, as Robin said, asses in chairs, so that we can see what you're doing. We don't, we'll spot the mouse jiggler laying on your desk or whatever. So what, how should employers, I guess the question is just kind of, because I could ramble on with a bunch of observations, I guess, but how should employers approach this, Larry? Like, I don't like the idea that they would make a mass policy for everybody because one person would do this, but
Right.
that's a very typical HR reaction in a lot of
Yeah.
cases, or corporate reaction. So
And
what do you see being done, and how would you approach this?
yeah, no, absolutely. And this one I can also speak to firsthand because we're doing some of this ourselves, right? I mean, I think that your first point about the potential for overreacting, I think is very much a possibility. Also, you have to look at the effectiveness of how they react, and is it really going to eliminate or greatly reduce it, or does it just sort of, maybe require some additional creativity for people to pull it off, right? But what I would say is how we look at it as well. It's, I think, first looking at the job type and the role, right? What is that individual doing? So, roles where it is, performance is, more easily and objectively measured, where there's consistency in kind of the nature of the work, right? So for example, for ourselves, you know, the work we do day in, day out, you know, but that's a very large part of our organization, is the background, you know, screening work, right? So for us, you know, we're really looking at it as we do want to measure that productivity and the effectiveness, and we are doing that. It could feel like Big Brother, because in some ways it is, right? But what I would say is some of that has to do with how you apply the tool or this approach. You know, what we are, you know, very much aiming toward is we're not just trying to identify those that, you know, maybe aren't meeting the grade or, you know, something going on. We're also using it to identify the highest performers and looking at how is it they get this additional work done? How is it that their quality is higher than their peers? So, you know, in many ways, that's the more value focus area for us because that's what we want to replicate. Yes, we want to, you know, prevent a large portion of our workforce, you know, in that case, being less productive. But ultimately, we want to get to, you know, a workforce that does this really well. And as we've started to do this, we're getting tremendous insight around, you know, what does, you know, why is one person doing it, you know, so much better than another? But the important part we're adding into that is looking at the incentives around, you know, that are appropriate and that align with that objective, right? So rather than have it be a punitive sort of view that if I do my job at 100% plus, I get my paycheck, right? And if I don't, well, they ding me in some way, right? We're looking at it saying, look, we want individuals to overperform, right? And part of the phenomenon of quiet quitting is I just get it to a certain level, then I kind of stop, right? But, you know, we do know, and this is often the case with high performers, right? They want to be high performers. They want to be recognized as a high performer, right? They'd love to have some income upside, you know, being a high performer, right? So those are all, you know, we really want to align toward an ability to achieve those objectives for individuals, right? So, and that has been a positive aspect of what's come out of this is yes, we've identified individuals in one area. We had a number of individuals just leave their job because they knew this was being implemented. And they basically said, they're going to catch me, I'm gone. Right? So, but the reaction from the high performers has been, you know, quite exciting because it really, again, they want to be recognized for that. They like knowing that they're a high performer and that they, you know, do the job very well. And then, you know, and we're working toward an appropriate financial incentive that can, you know, reward that approach. So to me, it's really, you know, the bigger aspect of this is the evolution of our work environment, yes, but it's also the evolution of our individuals' mindsets toward work. I think the sort of traditional corporate role has, you know, evolved because we've had, you know, gig economy, you know, grow up out of nowhere. It creates a, I think, a difference in the relationship between the employee and the employer where it's maybe a bit more transactional. I mean, when my father retired, he had worked for General Electric for close to 40 years, right? It's almost unheard of now that someone would do that, right? So, you know, the nature of the work in the gig economy, the, you know, higher churn, and so forth, it does really exacerbate these problems and make them, you know, make them much more central to being addressed. They're not going away, right? They're not going away. Long answer to your question, but I covered a lot of ground here.
I think another semi-related aspect to this, and I don't know how the two intersect, but in my mind they intersect, is there are for a number of years, even pre-pandemic, let's say pre-pandemic even, but you know, there's this other HR related thing that happens. I've never experienced because I've not worked for these sorts of organizations or large companies, but especially again, especially in tech, where you know, a candidate is interviewed often remotely, right? May even do some sort of an assessment, again, remotely. that person is hired, the person that, and then the person that shows up, the new employee, is literally not
That
the
part.
person that went through the interview.
Yes, we have seen this. We have seen this as well. And all of these, when you think about, what's involved in something like that occurring, right? Don't made a bit easier now because we're remote, because there's every reliance on technology, right? That to create a fictional person or a variation, you can do it. You can create a whole online presence. You can, it's a very it's a very real issue. I wouldn't say it's widespread yet, but it's really another level though of turn beyond just sort of the overemployment aspect, because it's fraudulent, right? We have run into this, and we obviously, when I we are always adapting our approaches to verifying individuals' backgrounds. But the identity verification of ensuring that I am talking to, and this is the person who, right? It becomes more prominent in this in that dynamic, and very real. So we you'll see things like and we've seen it done by a group of people get together and do this. They'll create fictitious backgrounds. They'll find ways to reference their work history sort of with each other. Right. So it's a more of a sophisticated sort of approach to it, right? So in our business, we just always have to be mindful of those dynamics as they emerge and make sure we have the appropriate ways to really try to identify that, or if we can't, make sure customers are aware of where there might be a gap that's just hard to overcome. But you're right. It is a we are seeing that increase more as well, for sure.
Larry, we're coming up on time. So I want to ask one last question, which wasn't on the list, sort of, but it, like Robin, I could see this coming into play, because it's already, in some cases replacing jobs and so forth. And how does AI factor in here? Because that could be for somebody who's trying to maximize productivity, but not necessarily quality of work, that might, or output rather, not productivity, but output of volume, that might be a magic wand,
Yes, and I think it's a really interesting area that obviously we're just at the beginning phases of seeing all the benefits and implications to it. So we probably need a whole separate conversation on that topic. But it's an interesting, as it comes together, you see companies looking at it and saying, wow, there's a lot of opportunity here from using generative AI to perform certain functions that before we had to have individuals do it, right? For individuals, and I see this a lot. It's, oh, I had that proposal. I just used ChatGPT and it wrote the proposal for me, wrote the contract for me. Right? Those are significant productivity enhancing tools. What I think is critical longer term is has to start, with the employer. What is the nature of these jobs, right? Which elements of AI are impacted? Which of these roles get impacted, and whether that's a maybe it's a risk, or it's a productivity potential. It's a you really need to start there, and I think have a view of what the path forward looks like as AI continues to emerge and has applicability there, right? I think that's, to me, first and foremost, you don't want to be in a position where you're reacting to, some employees starting to do this, or your competitors doing it and you're not aware of it, keeping up, right? So I would create the parallel of it's like other aspects of, automation that have occurred over time. If you look at like robotics in car factories or other places, right? It absolutely changed the nature of those roles, right? And you could probably maybe see that coming a little more straightforward way because it's very tangible and physical. But it's really nonetheless the same with AI. So understanding, that possibility, and then working, knowing that, right, and carving a path forward. The only other piece I'd just throw into the mix is it also requires a pretty good understanding of, liability. What am I, kind of getting myself into if I use AI, do I, could it go too far? But, I think the background screen world, there's lots of ways that AI can enhance some of the work we do, but it being a substitute for, the work where a machine or an AI application makes these decisions for us, I don't think we're going to see that world anytime soon. And I don't think, based on everything I see out there, developing legislation and so forth, that's scary to people, right? For obvious reasons, right? So I think, it's going to be a really interesting as it unfolds. And there's going to be really good things and not so good things about it. But embracing it, I guess, is my, the way I look at it and what I'm doing with it is just take it full on and understand it. And don't let it surprise you and creep up on you.
Hey, Robin, why don't you take us out? I got to get back to my other job.
Yep, will do, will do. So thank you so much to Larry, who has joined us, Larry Neal from Sisiv, for this interesting conversation. What will the future hold? I guess that's what we're looking at. So Larry, can you let our listeners know how they can connect with you, find you online, etc.?
Yes, I'm happy to do that. You'll always find me on LinkedIn. If you would like to email me directly, my email address is L, like Larry, Neal, NEAL, so all one word, L Neal at Sisiv.com, Sisive.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again for joining us. Enjoy London while you're there. And thank you for stopping by the drive-thru.
My pleasure. And it was
Oh,
great to meet you
yeah,
both.
Larry, thanks. We
Thanks,
really
Mark.
appreciate you doing the
No
show.
problem.
Have a great week.
You too.